Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I am James Jones. I'm joined today by Mr. Greg Leahy.
Oi, oi, everyone.
Mr. John Lindemann.
Breaking news, James. Microsoft has acquired this podcast.
I was about to make the exact same joke.
Terms were not disclosed, but rumor has it that it was for a Starbucks coffee and a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos.
We are for sale. We will take counteroffers as they are put forward. And Guillaume Veillette.
Yep, that's me. Sorry, I was also preparing some kind of, you know, that type of joke, and then I'm like, you know what, that's not, I can't.
It's a me, Guillaume.
I've already been sure. Bought out by CompuServe. Where is this going?
Thank you for listening to my podcast. I don't know where the rest of that joke goes. It is January 20th, 2022. And this is episode 755. I promised you in the very first episode of the year I would remember the episode numbers, and I am 3 for 3.
Incredible.
Hey.
That's a hell of a track record, James.
Hey, no, you don't get the joke, because you'd be like, I've been on the show for 5 straight weeks, Iron Man.
I'd say, hey.
And I'd be in the middle of like a 72-episode streak, and I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's if you don't give yourself credit, who will? That's what I say.
Okay, well, then I'm giving myself credit. 755.
Yeah, that's fine. Fair enough.
755 episodes worth of credit. We're going to start this week with a little bit of email because some things happened. Like, nothing major, but some things. John, would you mind reading the first? It's kind of long, so you can pause after the first paragraph and we can talk a little bit.
Certainly. Voodoo writes, Microsoft. Activision, $70 billion U.S. dollars. Discuss. How does this make any financial sense for Microsoft? Assuming the ultimate goal is to increase Game Pass subscriptions, this seems like a poor investment. At 25 million subscribers, paying an average of $10 a month, I guess on my part, that works out to $3 billion in annual revenue, meaning it will take over 23 years for Microsoft to recoup the $70 billion they spent. Maybe this purchase will significantly increase subscriber count, but the folks already paying for Game Pass were apparently perfectly happy to do so without Activision games on the platform. There's an argument to be made that we shouldn't count those players and instead say that Microsoft needs to get an additional 25 million subscribers to pay an average of $10 a month for the next 23 years to recoup their money. Am I being reductive?
Yeah, so in case you didn't catch the news that I texted John and just got holy shit back twice... which is the correct response, because all I could muster in response was also holy shit.
That's what I woke up to. I mean, James obviously lives in the Eastern time zone, and so he sees this news before I do, and so I woke up to this and I was like, why the hell is James texting me this early in the morning? And I'm like, whoa, wow, what? I don't even really know how to react to that. So
I don't think I even told you what it was. I think I just said Microsoft fired the money cannon.
Well, I knew it right. I was like, oh my god, who did Microsoft buy? And then I looked it up and I'm like, holy crap. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. So, yes, they bought Activision Blizzard that you might be aware of that is maybe having some difficulties. And it was announced on Tuesday, right? Wednesday? I can't remember. But it erupted is probably the best way of describing that news, because this is the publisher of a number of tentpole titles that kind of mark out parts of the year. They are a huge development resources, like the number of development studios they have, and a giant publisher. And they were, at least from a market float value, the most valuable, which is not a good way to evaluate these things. Market float doesn't really mean what it should mean. The most valuable of the third-party publishers, and suddenly they are deep in the Microsoft camp. And this obviously has to go through reviews. Honestly, it's a little bold of Microsoft to make this play, because there is a certain undercurrent of antitrust concerns around the tech big four. So that's your Apple. Well, Apple always gets away with shit.
Yeah.
But Google, Facebook, excuse me, Meta... Microsoft and Apple. And look, Meta, because they're also having problems, that name only exists as a smokescreen for the fact they're having problems. So, So the question is, why did Microsoft do this? And John, I think you know what their answer is. Do you want to say it? It's a two word. There's a three word version of it too.
I don't know. More games. I don't know.
Because they can.
They can. Yes, they
That's
can.
That's the answer. They did it because they can. Because $70 billion is nothing to Microsoft. It doesn't matter. It's none of this matters. We joked on this show recently that shit like crypto is ruining my ability to process fiat currency as a real thing. This is also attacking my ability to accept fiat currency as a real thing, because apparently $70 billion just doesn't fucking matter. It's just immaterial. It's just a number. Yeah. So I want to give a little context on this. There's been a lot of chatter, especially when it was right after announced, this is Microsoft's attempt to take Sony out back and old Yellerum and stuff like that. How's Sony going to compete? Is Microsoft going to hold? Because right now Sony has the exclusive marketing rights on a bunch of Activision stuff. Are those deals going to hold, or is Microsoft going to buy them out? First and foremost, nothing is going to change immediately. And I mean nothing, because this thing's going to take a year plus to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And guess who's still in charge at Activision Blizzard until it goes through?
Good old Bobby.
Yep, Bobby Kotick. Activision Blizzard is in the middle of a number of scandals relating to how they treat their workers, sexual harassment.
Raven QA is on strike.
Yeah, they have an entire QA team on strike right now. There are concerns about professionalism, about, wasn't there somebody who signed his email with something about penises every fucking nonsense? People who were deep rock stars at Blizzard were apparently fucking terrible people, even way back before the Activision acquisition.
Yeah.
All of this is this is a company that is roundly being pounded by scandal. They're under investigation by various government agencies. Investors are not pleased, obviously, and it's deeply hurt the stock value. It's fallen fairly hard. But there's one thing that is unkillable. And it's Bobby Kotick. And the reason he's unkillable...
How can you kill that which has no life, James?
Well, so the problem is that everybody always talks about, why doesn't the board just fire him? Because they can't. He came into Activision when Activision was in really bad shape.
Yeah, he's worked there for 31 years.
Yeah, Activision was not the company you think of now. Even during the GameCube, Xbox, PS2 era, it was not the company you think of now. He grew that company. And he grew that company after making a big cash investment in it. But the cash that he put in goes a hell of a lot farther then than it goes now with respect to Activision ownership. So... I believe he's still the largest individual owner.
I actually checked today to see how much his net worth is, and it is $870 million.
Okay. So he doesn't own as much as I thought he did.
Yeah.
But for a while, he was the biggest individual owner of the company, which meant that the board couldn't get rid of him because he's a voting member of the board. And he had a vote, and that was it. But the board doesn't want to get rid of him because he made them a lot of money.
Yeah.
An insane amount of money. So why are they selling then? Well, because this is one way to get rid of Bobby Kotick. This is a way to unload your problems. Because they've got a lot of problems, and they're not going to go away. There's going to be lawsuits. There's going to be government action. As you said, they've got labor unrest. I believe they have other studios that are working on unionizing. There's a lot of things that a company doesn't want to deal with. The company's corporate speak for this is, they're experiencing unforeseen headwinds.
Yeah, I also think, though, I mean, in the one interview that Kotick had, I forget who it was with, maybe Bloomberg or the New York Times, but the one thing he mentioned was that just in terms of the gaming climate, they need to, and I think part of this is true, part of this is smokescreen, but he was talking about, well, really to compete over the next, 5-10 years, we're going to have to make significant investments in, cloud infrastructure and all this kind of jazz, which I think is true to a certain point. But there's still a lot of other stuff going on.
They had plenty of cash to do that if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Here's where the knife comes in. So I want to give a little context on this. Bloomberg reported yesterday And this will give you more context as to why this number happened. Because it's well over the stock price. But whenever you do an acquisition, you always pay over the stock price. That's the only way you can get investors to just sell you big chunks.
Yeah, they pay like, what, $95 a share?
Yeah, way over the stock price, which I think it was in the 70s, maybe the 80s. You pay that premium because you're acquiring the company, and it's essentially a convenience fee. It's a finder's fee. Yeah. People went and harvested all that stock, and you're paying. This is them cashing out. Is that when the reports came out that Kodak himself had mistreated female employees and that he had been covering for senior managers who had done the same, they heard from the big three. The big three console manufacturers all made it clear in one way or another to Activision that, yo, this shit needs to get dealt with. They didn't do it publicly. Like Nintendo is known that they did theirs behind the scenes. Microsoft did it publicly. They issued a statement. But apparently also Phil Spencer, his new title is CEO of gaming. He got a new title as part of the deal, made it clear that this has to change. But hey, if you want out, give us a call.
Yeah. And I've seen actually conflicting reports about who made the first move. I think it was Microsoft, right?
So the according to the Bloomberg report, basically Phil Spencer, just as part of his like fucking fix it call, he just sort of let them know that, like, but if y'all want to talk about a deal, which a smart play, because I could see a lot of investors wanting to get out of what is going to be a 10 plus year. And that's what it's going to take. These kinds of lawsuits and government actions take forever.
Yeah. And this to me, it's a reclamation project, probably even bigger than what Microsoft did after the Xbox One launch. But it's along that same timeline though, right? It's going to take 5 years for them to actually fix this mess.
At least.
Yeah.
But so apparently, knowing that there was an offer out there, although it might not have had a number attached to it, the Activision board decided to reach out to Mark Zuckerberg to see if Meta wanted to make an offer, because you never sell yourself on one offer. Ever. And Facebook, Meta, whatever, basically punted. But to the question of why is this worth it to Microsoft, that I just gave you the answer, is why it is worth it to Microsoft. Because the big four don't like to come near each other. Like they'll compete sometimes, but they don't like to compete directly. So your Amazon, I think I give you different big four. Your Amazon, Microsoft, Facebook, Meta, and then Apple to different Google, and then Apple's kind of out there on their own little space. They don't like to compete directly if they can avoid it, because that's really expensive. And if you can compete sort of on the margins, it's not quite as expensive. Because if you have to go full war chest, you're going to spend billions of dollars and you might lose. So Microsoft is more than happy to keep someone like Meta from owning one of the biggest publishers in the world, because that makes it harder for Meta to establish a proper gaming division. They're happy to keep it away from Google, because right now Stadia is not in the best shape. But if Stadia was the exclusive home of all Activision games, that would certainly be a boon to Stadia. Microsoft is happy to keep Google and Facebook, I've already said, is happy to keep Amazon out, because Amazon's already investing hugely in games. They've made the spruce goose of online role-playing games that they've just finally got out. But Amazon has shown they don't give a shit. They'll spend all the money in the world, man. This is a defensive play. That's why this was important. Spencer, I'm sure, and Microsoft's strategy team recognize that Activision Blizzard was likely going to explore a sale, because this is such a long-term reclamation project, and the investors are going to want to get their money when they can, because it's not clear that the reclamation will work. It's a gamble. So if you can cash out now and make money and leave, then if you're an investor, especially if you're an institutional investor who's like responsible for the retirement accounts of 800 million teachers or whatever, your job is to try to mitigate risks like this. And so you're going to do that. You're going to mitigate that risk. And you're going to say, okay, let's explore a sale. And Microsoft does not want, has nothing to do with Sony. They don't give a shit. Sony's an established player in the space, but they're not a threat at the sort of full enterprise level of Google, Facebook, and Amazon.
To put it in perspective, Sony is a Microsoft customer. They're putting everything on Azure, right?
Right. Yeah. Sony,
to give you an idea of that.
Sure. I mean, Microsoft would probably love to be in a place where they completely dominate this area, but that's not table stakes.
Yeah,
it's not table stakes to
them.
And
that also comes into, like, you know, I see a lot of this stuff. Oh, well, you know, everything from Activision Blizzard is now going to be exclusive to Xbox and PC, whatever. I don't totally buy that. I really don't.
Maybe, but not for a while.
I think some things, absolutely, but not for a while. And also, it's like something like, you know, Call of Duty. I look at that kind of as Minecraft, where it's on so many platforms, and more importantly, it makes so much money that I don't see what they would gain by not having it on PlayStation.
The one thing I thought about that might give me some pause there, just a little bit, is if they decide to turn it from an annualized franchise into a service game.
Yeah.
And then it being on everything is less important, because you're not trying to sell a new copy every year. You're trying to continually get a dedicated audience to reinvest. And if you're dedicated enough to buy into the service game and keep putting money in, you'll go buy an Xbox.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see what they do with that business model, because their business model up to this point, and really Activision Blizzard overall, I would say, they have been one of the most ruthlessly capitalist companies out there in terms of, if this franchise isn't making money, kill it.
Right.
If this studio isn't making us money, kill it. And they just have not cared. Right?
Right.
There's so many dormant, I mean, there's a graveyard of dormant IP that Activision.
Not just dormant, like dormant companies.
Companies, yes.
Like Sierra Online.
Yeah.
Everything Sierra Online ever made, which is sort of like a early to mid 90s, like they were absolutely powerhouses in PC games.
They were.
Every single game they made is owned by Activision Blizzard. And the only time we've ever seen Sierra was they briefly considered launching a web store with that name. Mm-hmm. Like there is the potential that this unlocks a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
But Microsoft isn't making this deal because they think they can get iterative game sales. They're making this deal because they're keeping competitors out.
Mm-hmm.
They're locking out a business model, or they're tying up a business model that lets them expand the reach of other services that they also produce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'll get some more sales from Game Pass. And yeah, Game Pass is going to be like an even hotter deal now. Now, they might not renew the deal with EA Play, because now it might be somewhat duplicative. Because EA Play is on Game Pass, and maybe they'll just go like, we don't really necessarily need it anymore. But this was about locking things down. And the other thing to keep in mind is, I don't know that Sony could have made this deal.
No.
The money, Sony probably could have come up with the money. It would have been harder. It'd have been a hell of a lot harder. But you got to understand what this kind of merger and acquisition is. This is the part that I want to really impress on people, is that Microsoft is buying a wounded animal that lives in probably, I would guess, 30 plus US states, has offices, which means they have 30 plus states worth of labor laws, that probably operates in a dozen or more countries. So they have international labor laws. They have international taxes. They have different state taxes. Just the HR challenge alone of bringing in Activision Blizzard's 10,000 employees,
mm-hmm.
plus unknown numbers of consultants. Some who are under collective bargaining agreements, some who aren't, some who are working remote. They might be working remote in other states than the state they currently work in. Like the HR test here. These kinds of acquisitions are incredibly hard just to execute from like an HR, from a technology systems, and from all, like, just getting the email squared away. Like my company did an acquisition, and that's been a headache, and it was not this big. Very few companies that could have handled it, and Microsoft wants none of them owning a major gaming publisher. And that's what it comes down to. Like, the four companies or five companies that could have done this, Microsoft is willing to pay this kind of money, which, by the way, is like less than half of Bill Gates' net worth, even though he doesn't work at the company anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft basically makes about $45 billion per quarter.
Yeah.
Per quarter. Yeah. So they're making like they're making nearly $200 billion a year in revenue. So but the one thing I would add though is the one thing it does do for Microsoft is it gives them a foothold in the mobile space.
With, it does.
With Candy Crush Saga, not that I care about that game, but like, you know, Call of Duty.
It makes bank.
It makes
Candy
bank.
Candy Crush Saga makes bank.
Call of Duty is out there, and don't forget that Blizzard has Diablo Immortal coming out.
Right.
Which is, it gives, that's going to be a big game. So.
The King acquisition by Activision Blizzard, and then the Blizzard acquisition by Activision, and they bought them from, what's that French
company's
name?
Vivendi,
right. Yeah. And then that money went into pursuing a hostile takeover of Ubisoft, which, like, it's this really insane, vicious cycle of, like, Activision bought Blizzard from Vivendi. Vivendi used some of that money to try to pursue a hostile takeover of Ubisoft. Ubisoft's executive boards ran the company as hard as they could and used their force of personality to drive it off, and then themselves created all kinds of scandal. There's another wounded animal out there, but again, there's a big barrier that you're going to have to work through. But honestly, the result here is this is an opportunistic predator who wants to make sure their turf isn't being violated. But the King acquisition is secretly like some pretty potent stuff because it's not just you get access to these games and whatever. You get expertise that Microsoft probably doesn't have in-house.
Yep.
You get access to people who have made successful mobile games, plural. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of companies who have made successful mobile game. It's the follow-up that tends to elude a lot of these companies. And King has been successful. King, I'm sure when Microsoft's HR team gets involved, like who knows what they'll find there. King's been the one leg of that stool that hasn't been reporting problems. Let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, John, you pointed out there's currently labor negotiations going on inside AB. AB developers are in the process of unionizing or have unionized. I'm not sure where they're at right now. There is multiple state regulators looking at the actions of these executives. There are, I'm sure, federal regulators and international regulators doing the same. There are lawsuits and who knows what else. And there's going to be a big antitrust review on this acquisition.
Yeah, and I'm sure Phil Spencer will come in. He will just say, "Look, clean this up.
Yeah,
do whatever you got to do."
It's going to take a long time.
Yeah,
and there just aren't that many companies that could have handled it. Like, so any company that has the firepower to solve AB's problems and ingest a company that size is going to face a pretty thorough antitrust review. And they might have to sell off some of the so Activision Blizzard owned a lot of its studios. You know, I could see a scenario where they have to sell off some of the studios and then they just strike contract deals with them to make the games as contractors or something. Like, you might see some of this pop off in the next few, in the next year or so, which is roughly, I think they said year to 18 months. But yeah, I mean, I don't expect to see anything change with respect to the Activision games for at least, I would not be surprised if nothing changes until like the PS6 era comes around.
Yeah, I'm curious though. I mean, that's the thing. Much like when they acquired Bethesda, it's the same thing. It's not really the games that they have in development right now, but what's going to happen with the games that are coming? So you saw them take like Elder Scrolls 6. That's going to be Xbox PC exclusive. That's years away, right? Redfall. You know, they kept Deathloop on, you know, PS5, but
exclusively
because I'm sure that contract was already written up. Right. So,
right.
But
yeah.
They will honor, and they've already said that, like, Sony, they've already come out and said, okay, well, we're going to honor the contracts that we already have in place with Sony in regards to Call of Duty,
which means Sony is going to continue to be the lead platform for Call of Duty.
Yes. But when that deal is up,
right,
all bets are off. Now, do I think they would take it exclusive? I doubt it because it's so big. But I just think about games like Diablo 4, Overwatch 2. I think Diablo 4 is far enough along that they would probably keep it still, you know, on Sony platforms.
Probably.
But there's always a cost. I'm sure that one of the things they're going to do is they're going to come in and they're going to say, how much is it going to cost us to put Diablo 4 on PS5? and right. then maintain it for half a decade afterwards. And right. is that worth it to us? Overwatch 2, I think that's going to be Xbox PC exclusive because that's been pushed off to 2023, if not beyond. That's kind of in development yeah. hell from what everything that's been reported.
Or at a minimum, like if they say, well, we're going to continue to put it on PS5, like every Overwatch tournament is going to be played on an Xbox.
Yeah.
With an Xbox controller, which means that's how, or on PC. But like you're gonna see Xbox branding all over that game. It's going to be the lead platform.
Yeah.
It's the Microsoft's dumb E3 events and John, even you as the owner of the world's most powerful video game console acknowledge Microsoft's E3 presentations were always the dumbest.
Oh, they're always the dumbest, yeah.
They're going to be so incredibly dumb.
Yeah. Now. I mean, what are they gonna be like 4 hours long now?
there's gonna be
You know
the team from Treyarch is going to descend in a Hummer from the roof.
Yeah, well, not from the roof. They're going to come out of a C-130.
Oh, they're going to get dropped out of a C-130.
Yeah, it's going to be like something out of Fast and Furious now.
No, it's going to be like something out of a playground games game because it's going to transition from Call of Duty to a Horizon game.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like Call of Duty and Horizon together at last.
Yes, Call of Duty X Horizon. Yeah.
Yeah, it's coming. Like I legitimately think Horizon 6 will have a Call of Duty crossover. I think it's going to happen it's going to be so stupid.
I think that sounds too likely not to happen.
Like imagine if that was DLC pack 1 is like you're in Call of Duty land.
Yeah.
Then they couldn't have shooting
with all Call of Duty vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll drive the rating up, but it could be like this would teach you to military drive and stuff like that.
Yep.
Yeah, this is gonna happen. This is inevitable. Welcome to the future.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's a chance that we see some IP investment that AB's not been willing to make. You know, yeah. AB really consolidated around their money makers.
Yeah, they really did.
And part of that is because they have annualized their big franchises. Yep. That requires you consolidate around your money makers. You can't have 20 projects going on if you've got to put these big, you know, $300+ million games out every year, because you have to have three of those things going at all times. It eats up resources. Microsoft has shown they are very interested in service games. And service game, I mean, Halo is a service game at this point. They called it Halo Infinite for a fucking reason. I would not be surprised at all if the next Call of Duty is a service game, and that way they don't have to have four studios making a Call of Duty game at one time.
Well, I mean, it already is. They have Warzone.
Yeah. But like if the whole game orients to being like, yeah, we'll have a campaign, whatever. But like the whole game is oriented around this constantly growing service component, and then you free up those other teams to do other stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever that stuff is. It gives you the ability to diversify when you don't like they consolidation versus diversification are both valid strategies. And for AB, it had proved to be an incredibly lucrative strategy. But Microsoft really isn't pursuing the revenue stream on these games. So
yeah.
For them, diversification is more valuable because it shows the vitality of the platform they're trying to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, there's games that Blizzard has put on the back burner. That
oh, yeah.
Certainly they've been put on the back burner just because they aren't as popular as they used to be. I mean, I have a list here. I compiled a list of all of the franchises that they now own. Not all of them, but the major ones.
You're gonna bring some highlights?
Going all the way back, Pitfall, River Raid.
Hell yes.
From the 2600, right? I mean, there's all those 2600 games. Not that they would do much with them, but I could see them making, you know, a new 2D platformer in the Pitfall series.
Remember Xbox Arcade? On the 360, bring that shit back because Activision was there. I want Venetian blinds, John.
Yeah, you deserve them.
I do.
So Pitfall, River Raid, Zork. They own the entire Zork series.
Microsoft owns Zork.
Yeah, they own Zork because Activision bought Infocom. There you go.
Right.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, Call of Duty. They own the True Crime series. Guitar right. Hero, DJ Hero, Band Hero. Yep. Geometry Wars, Project Gotham Racing, Prototype. Skylanders, Spyro the Dragon, everything you touched on, Sierra Online, King's Quest, Leisure Suit Larry, Police Quest, Gabriel Knight.
Leisure Suit Larry. And of Microsoft course, owns Leisure Suit Larry.
Yeah, right? And they have Candy Crush, obviously, Diablo Immortal, Warcraft, the original Warcraft series, World of Warcraft, Overwatch 1 and 2, Diablo, StarCraft, Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm. So they own all of that. So they can do whatever they want with any of those IP.
Microsoft employee leisure suit, Larry.
Well, I mean, I think StarCraft Ghost is coming back. I think it's coming back.
There you go. That's the feel.
That's the takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot.
It is.
Like it's a lot to take in, and I mean that from our standpoint, but also from Microsoft's. It's a lot. Like remember, it took us 10 years, but memes finally convinced these idiots at Microsoft that people actually like Battletoads, and they went and made another Battletoads. We have the power to meme these fools into making anything. So we just need to figure out what piece of that list is the funniest and then meme the shit out of it. We have that power as a society. Let's use it for good. And by that, let's use it to make a game that nobody actually wants. So Microsoft can do this giant E3 announcement and go, Battletoads is back. And everybody can go, who the fuck asked for this?
Guys, Frostbite is back.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I was thinking Pitfall was the game.
Yeah.
Like, what if they say, Sony's got Uncharted. What if we make Pitfall?
I was thinking the same thing. Like, I was thinking exactly the same thing.
I want to convince Microsoft to spend $400 million on a Pitfall game. That's all I want with my life.
Yeah.
I could die happy.
Pitfall Harry is back.
They walk out and be like, Pitfall Harry the Third. Because remember, the Pitfall the Mind Adventure relaunch in like 95 was Pitfall Harry Jr.
Yeah.
It's been 20 years. Pitfall Harry the Third.
I mean, they had like Pitfall 3D, I think.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They just go like, Pitfall is back. Lights go flashing. Smoke comes out on the screen. Suddenly it's a jungle scene behind them. A guy walks out dressed like Indiana Jones with a gun. Mm-hmm. And he just rolls out there. He's like holding a bunch of gemstones. It's like, Pitfall is back, motherfucker. And then they just like cut to a sizzle reel. And it's just money everywhere. And then everyone watching online goes, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
As the audience at Microsoft's press event sits in stunned silence that this is actually happening.
Yeah.
That's our future. We can make it happen. You can make it happen. Yeah, that's where we're at. So, Voodoo wrote a lot more. But I mean, this is really about kind of where I want to note one thing. I'm asking for honest, insightful opinions. None of this J&J bullshit. I'm always disappointed when you answer an earnest question with a joke response. J&J was a one-time segment. That was fun, but it's worn out as welcome. Damn, dude. Damn. Sometimes being the J&J stuff is a little too close to reality. I think I like to imagine reality came to us. All right, let's move a little bit closer to home. Guillaume, would you read the next email?
I will. All right, Scenario writes, okay, so quote-unquote hypothetically, what would be the number Microsoft would have to offer Nintendo in order to buy it? Because I think it's more possible now than ever. So, signed, slightly concerned.
I don't think it's possible at all. I don't think Nintendo would ever sell to an American company.
Right, that's the thing I've heard, right? Yeah, the Japanese companies are better protected, but please explain it, James. Why are they better protected?
It's just regulators ultimately. Hmm. Like it's a lot of this is I don't read Japanese business magazines that much. I do occasionally like read stuff from them, but most of their stuff is in Japanese. And look, I've been studying Japanese. I'm not business magazine good. There is.
you haven't been watching the anime I Can't Believe My Little Sister Is Trading Stocks?
That's a real anime.
I bet it is.
Did you know that? Did you know that? Or did you just make that up? Because that's basically real.
I bet it is.
fuck. Yeah, but it's. The regulators just aren't going to let it happen. Like there are companies that Japan regards as sort of intrinsic to their business society and their culture, and they have cultural value beyond their numerical value. And they're just not going to let that happen. Like the regulators are the key to everything, and they just won't let it happen. There are some laws in place that make it more difficult for foreign ownership to assume ownership of a Japanese company. It's not, as people say on internet for shorthand, impossible. Like, it could happen. You could in theory legally do it, but it is going to be incredibly difficult to pull off. So it's not a big, like, huge concern. Now the larger issue is, and John mentioned it, is that why would they ever do it? Like, it's not in their nature. And Nintendo doesn't need the money. To my knowledge, they're not in the middle of a scandal. We know they have a whole shitload of money in hand. Like, we know they're sitting on huge cash reserves. But a lot of the stock is also held inside the company or by family members. Because remember, Nintendo was, until Mr. Iwata took over, literally a family business. So in a way, selling would be easier because you could get your hands on enough stock to make it happen very quickly. But in practicality, it would be a lot harder because the individuals who would have to agree to the sale are likely the ones most motivated to not want to do it. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is the market cap of Nintendo is tough to estimate because a lot of the stuff is, like I said, a lot of the stock's held inside the company. But it's roughly $63 billion, I think. It's like 7 trillion yen. So, as I said earlier, you're going to have to pay a premium. Let's say it's 20%. That's 80-something billion yen or dollars you're going to have to come up with to make that deal work, plus appeasing international regulators, plus integrating this company that's got a very divergent culture. Like, that's one of Nintendo's things that's known about them, is their culture is extremely divergent. And they're going to have to learn to basically, to get any value out of them, they're not going to know how to make games for your system. They're going to have to learn. That entire company is going to have to learn to work in the Microsoft ecosystem. I don't think they present value. Like, I think it would be a feather in the cap, but much like with the Sony thing, I think Nintendo living in that space is actually, this is going to sound weird, it's actually a net benefit from Microsoft's perspective. It's not going to generate them a huge amount of money if they were to acquire Nintendo for the cost outlay. Nintendo's not a threat to sell to Facebook, that's for fucking sure, or to Amazon, or to Google. Like, like we say, culturally divergent, like, holy shit. So they're not really a threat to be an asset for one of the companies Microsoft wants to keep out. So what do they gain from it? Right now, Nintendo's presence in the space continues to sort of build up the wall around the space that makes it harder for other people to enter. Like, they operate in a niche, and as a consequence, they are, especially with the Switch, fully occupying that niche, which means it's not available to one of the other players to try to enter this space in a different, you know, in a diversified position outside where Microsoft's current market target is. So Nintendo is sort of an accidental ally, I guess, in keeping companies like Meta, or Apple in this case more specifically, Facebook. I say Meta and Facebook because Meta's a shitty name and I'll never remember it. Facebook, Google, Apple, Amazon. Like, they are occupying space that it keeps those other companies from getting into. So I don't think there's an incentive for them to buy it. I think the buy would be incredibly difficult. I think absorbing the company would be very difficult. I think the cost outlay would be huge. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is, I think this one's going to get through. I think the Activision Blizzard buy is going to get through regulators, because ultimately they'll be able to say, we're buying a publishing studio. We're going to continue to release games on other platforms. They might even put into their acquisition terms, we will continue to release, like, our top five games on other platforms for the next X number of years. Like, those kinds of things happen. They're called consent decrees. But buying Nintendo is a different game, because they'd actually be buying a console manufacturer out of the space. And that people would be able to say, you are explicitly decreasing the competition right now. Microsoft could argue with the Activision Blizzard acquisition, they're making themselves a more fit competitor in the space against, like, Sony. by increasing their portfolio, by buying one of the other manufacturers, they are explicitly shrinking the space. And that's where antitrust investigators tend to get their hair up more. So I just don't think there's any win there for them. I don't think there's any real net gain. And I think a vibrant Nintendo is ultimately better for their strategic objectives. So there's the Voodoo. There's your very serious answer, sir. Are you happy? Here's the J&J answer. Microsoft should buy the Amico. There.
Absolutely. They could really turbocharge it.
I don't know. Who else wants to speak? I've done a lot of talking.
Yeah, I just don't think it would happen just philosophically.
I suppose people talk about it because of the story. You know, well, I mean, they probably talk about it in any event, but certainly it helps when you have those stories from 20 years ago that came right back up with the anniversary stuff that Xbox have been doing about, oh yeah, you know, didn't you like try and buy Nintendo and they just laughed at you, you know, 20 years ago kind of stuff. Like, so it comes up for that reason, but yeah, the landscape was so different then. I mean, they were trying to right astroturf a gaming kind of relevance, yeah, for their company, you know, right, which they don't have to do. They've been in it for 20 years. They don't need that anymore. So it's the utility of it is not so obvious anymore. But right, I will say, you know, everything that James and John has said makes plenty of sense to me, but with sort of somewhat in sympathy with what seems to be Voodoo's point of view, I do wonder sometimes about Microsoft's presence in games in general and acquisitions like this, because you're not wrong. They do it because they can, and you know they see some strategic you know, value in it with competitors and all this kind of thing. But you do, there is this thing called opportunity cost, you know, and right, and it's like, yes, they can spend these vast quantities of money on this particular thing, that particular thing, but they could also spend it on other stuff that might be more fruitful. You know, like, that's what I would always wonder about this. Even, you know, with games going all the way back, it's, you know, one of these things where it's like, okay, so basically the first Xbox is guaranteed to lose money. That right, they knew that was, they had no intention of making money with the first Xbox.
And it sure did.
Yeah, and then with the 360, it's like, yes, well, we're making headway now. This one actually is popular, and, you know, for a time anyway, we're kind of beating Sony back in North America in particular. But, yeah, actually, we've got to spend an enormous amount of money to make the Red Ring of Death thing go away without everybody just, you know, completely toxifying the brand forever. You know, and then we get to Xbox One, and it's like, despite the fact that they haven't particularly, like, set the world on fire, all of a sudden they think they have, and they can, like, impose all these limitations and, you know, get people to buy Kinect and like, always be connected to the internet or whatever, because they're so powerful. And you know, it's like, they're not, and you have to embarrassingly climb down and get murdered by the PlayStation 4 globally. Like, all these things, all this money to achieve what exactly?
Money can't buy sense.
All of that money, and look, yet they have built up a brand, and it may yet pay off into, you know, the something much bigger. They're like, maybe, you know, everything that we, all our media consumption is pointed in the direction of subscription services, and they're already, you know, arranging this killer lineup of stuff. Right. You know, they're way ahead of the game in that regard, and maybe it's all gonna, you know, all the ships are gonna come in decades later. You know, and for that long range strategic kind of investments or whatever, maybe, you know, we should applaud them. But it does seem to me worth asking the question of, like, could this money not have been better spent? I suppose the problem is, you know, you think about all the development infrastructure that one could create with $70 billion,
Right.
And you know, from scratch. But, you know, maybe that kind of spending or investment, in fact, but, you know, the way people will look at spending and investment, somewhat in the eye of the beholder, it is just so much more difficult to sign off on when it isn't an existing asset. It isn't an existing, you know, kind of company that has a track record, that has recognition throughout the industry with consumers as well as, you know, actual developers, executives. So, you know, I guess it's one of these things that's just a lot easier to sign off on, and it's easier to justify as a piece that you're taking off the board from everyone else, as you've already mentioned. So, you know, there's plenty of ways you can look at it that it makes sense. But I feel like it's never been entirely clear to me what exactly they wanted to achieve with this whole tranche of their business. So.
Right. Well, just I want to come back to one thing that maybe people don't remember, but it was revealed in sometime in 2013 that the Microsoft's executives, when they bought Rare, thought that they were also getting the Donkey Kong IP.
Donkey Kong. Yeah.
So they're not that informed, and they're not that, like, they, I don't know, like, they were going in thinking,
yeah, they weren't.
At this point, yeah, surely they've got people in place who know what they're doing. But
Phil Spencer.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
It just speaks to the sort of frivolous nature of it that, you know, that I was, you know, sort of wondering about myself, that you could, you know, make an acquisition on a false premise, essentially, or at least somewhat incorrect.
Microsoft acquired Nokia for $7 billion and wrote it
off. Yeah, and then sold Nokia back to themselves, basically.
They literally flushed $7 billion down the tubes.
Ultimately, it all comes back around to, you know, what James said at the very beginning, because they can, and they have that much. You know, they have that much in terms of resources. So that is the answer, of course. But generally speaking, you're not gonna maintain that kind of flow of resources if you're that kind of frivolous about it. But as I said, they were in a very different place 20 years ago. You know, they have they have the presence in this industry for two decades, and the knowledge and the oversight, and hopefully, you know, a lot more. So I certainly, on whether, you know, this is a kind of justifiable acquisition, I certainly have more confidence in their decision making sort of matrix now than I would have done, you know, in that phase 20 years ago.
Also, don't forget too that purchasing Activision Blizzard really helps them with PC Game Pass. Really.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, PC Game Pass is definitely weaker up to this point, and now it becomes really strong.
Right. Especially if they can get that Activision back catalog compatible with modern PCs and up.
Yeah. And so, and if
that
you look,
Blizzard back catalog.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at what they've done, they've really solidified things. I mean, I don't know what more they could do on the console space to solidify themselves. PC space is taken care of, and now they also have, you know, mobile as well. So they're really, like, they've really solidified pretty much every single part of gaming.
Yeah, especially if they're able, if, like I said, if they let their development studios on the AB that they're acquiring diversify and make more things than just the thing.
Exactly. I'm really curious to see what they'll do with Sledgehammer, Treyarch, and Infinity Ward. I'd like to see them make different games. That'd be cool.
You have companies like Toys for Bob, who were primarily making, as the name would imply, these toy-to-life games. But, like, they're very competent at making things like platformers and stuff that Microsoft doesn't have an in-house studio that much for. And so, like, there's opportunities for these studios who haven't been allowed to do the thing because they've been doing the money thing to flesh out parts of their lineup that are not presently being served. Microsoft is often accused of being cars and guns, but there's a certain amount of it that's deserved. Like, those are overrepresented genres in their in-house stuff. And so, like, the acquisition of Obsidian and the Activision of I'm blanking on it.
Bethesda?
Elder Scrolls publisher. Yeah, Bethesda. Like, those were attempts to solve some of those, but not Bethesda, maybe a little bit less. There's diversification stuff there. And Greg, you really touched on it. Like, Microsoft's business model across their entire ecosystem of products, everything Microsoft does, they've been moving towards subscription-oriented or usage-based oriented. So all the money I spend with Microsoft at work, I have a Outlook subscription. I have the high-end Outlook subscription, too. I'm fancy. Fancy like that. I have your entire Office Suite subscription. I have a subscription on my Windows. I have a subscription on Vizio, which is a separate subscription, unfortunately. Visual Studio. And then everything I use in terms of hardware resources is all Microsoft owned, and I'm paying based on usage rates. All of those are like core business, like different diverse business plans that they've all managed to move towards a subscription model. Same with their game space. And so the goal really is, as opposed to selling something once, keep a continuous revenue stream. And yeah, bringing in diversity and bringing in more content helps that. But I think they're also trying, with their game stuff, trying to leverage components of their ecosystem together so that they create synergistic opportunity. And I'm using business speak. Oh God, what's happened? But yeah, I mean, if you were to ask Microsoft, let's go back when Bill Gates is planning his photo shoot with the Xbox Japan controller to go on the the serving trays at McDonald's. If you were to tell, which is a real thing, you can go Google
it. Oh, yeah.
If you were to ask him at that photo shoot and go, Bill, I'm going to give you a heads up. Y'all are going to spend like $300 billion in the space and not turn a profit. He might go, ah, shit. All right, let me call the boys. Let me call the boys.
Buy them out, boys.
That's right, buy them out, boys.
But I think now they would probably say it was worth it because they
because they have to.
Well, yeah, they have to. Yes, but like if you were to give them truth serum or something, I think there are people who have been removed from decision making positions who made bad calls. Matrick in particular. But if I think that they have probably brought value to their brand insofar as Microsoft cares about brand, by being more than the company your company buys Office from. I think there is an unquantifiable value to that. Because that has always been the perception. Oh, they're the company that gives you a word processor. And that, like, this stuff matters to companies in more than it might matter to their bottom line. It matters to investors because it's, you know, it's things they can point at. And we talked about this with Nintendo. We're like, they're going to keep trying to diversify. They've spent way too much time not diversifying. That applies to pretty much every company. Like, diversification is always individual diversification events may not be successful, but diversification broadly is a sound strategy, and that's what they pursued with the Xbox. Now, there might be some sunk cost fallacy at this point, but they've amassed such a powerful lineup of studios that at this point, like, they have to be taken seriously. I think the interesting thing will be, can they break out of being the North American only console?
Yeah.
Because they've never been able to get much of a toehold in Europe. It's Sony territory. And Japan is almost a laugh. It would be a laugh, but nobody who's not Ty Sugart remembers it exists to laugh at it.
I mean, Japan is even tough for Sony at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, just consoles. Dedicated consoles rather than a hybrid like the Switch. It's just tough sledding. And all the console makers with the current manufacturing constraints have demonstrated that, you know, Sony, I mean, there's more demand for PS5 in Japan than there are sales, but, like, you know, right, obviously with not many units to go around, they're not really putting that many of them into Japan because it's just like, well, you know, it's very much a secondary market for this kind of device. And then you know, if Sony's doing that, Microsoft, well, you know, it's way right down the priority list for them.
But, you know, if they can break into a second market, and maybe we need to stop referring to Japan as one of the primary markets, to start talking about Asia broadly, or start talking about other markets. Like, if they can find a market where they can start to expand, or they don't have to necessarily be the dominant player in Europe, but at least be relevant, outside the PC space. Like, if you consider the PC space, they're relevant worldwide. Because there are a lot of countries where PC gaming is the way games are played. But there are, that's sort of like the next test for them. And that's where they could potentially leverage these publishers and the studios they've bought to sort of make, like, you want to play Elder Scrolls? Well, you're not playing it on a PlayStation console. So make your choice. Now, you probably shouldn't have played Elder Scrolls on the PlayStation console because they had a tendency to blow up there. But now it's locked in. Like, this is what's going to happen. You want to play whatever, the next Doom. Well, we own Doom. Microsoft owns Doom. Like these things are, they could make a Smash clone now.
They absolutely could now. 100%.
They could make a better Smash clone than Sony's.
Man, the funniest thing I saw was the one article from Hard Drive. It was a repost. The guy says, "I'm pretty sure that what Microsoft has been doing, buying up all these studios, is in response to this article I made." Like, it's from 2014 or something, but it was a Smash clone from Microsoft, and it said it has two playable characters, Master Chief and a Forza car. And I was like, oh, so good. It's such a good article. Oh my God. It's so dead on.
Oh my God. Oh, I was joking in the NWR Discord yesterday that they should just fuck it and go buy Hasbro. Like, just like I was just going through the list of companies and I'm like, they should just buy Hasbro. I want Microsoft to be the publisher of Monopoly. That's what I want. Make this happen. This is all I care about now. I want Microsoft to own the rights to the movie version of Battleship. Please yeah. Make this part of my life. But yeah, Nintendo, you don't need to sweat Nintendo. I'll quantify this. If a time comes where Nintendo would be willing to sell to Microsoft or any of the other players or the players who aren't in the space right now, one, the bidding war would be immense. You know, I mean, Activision Blizzard went to Facebook, Meta, because they didn't want to go with one offer. You never go with one offer. I am shocked they only went to one other place. I suspect they didn't. I suspect they went to other places. It's just that's who had the source. Now, them going to Facebook Meta, who's in the middle of their own very similar scandals to Activision Blizzard, would have been fucking amazing. But as I mentioned earlier, with the size and scope of that company, there's really only like 5 or 6 companies who could physically manage that kind of acquisition. All of them would put in bids on Nintendo. Every last one of them. And they would be bidding against each other in huge, monstrous numbers. And in a weird way, that might be what's keeping it from happening. And that, beyond all the other stuff, all the other stuff not considered, the fear of starting, like, it's a Cold War situation. The fear of starting the actual war, the bidding war, is so, like, you're either going to lose and someone else is going to get them and you caused it, or you're going to spend way too much money on a company that you probably can't manage because they're weird. So in a weird way, there's an interest in not starting up the process. Now there is I'm blanking on the name of the company now. There's a very, very, very extremely wealthy Japanese company that is runs all kinds of stuff, but SoftBank. Like somebody like that, I think they're already a big holder. I could see them acquiring a lot of shares. Like that might be the play, but SoftBank, you wouldn't notice anything different, to be honest. But again, they've got a shitload of cash. So like if Nintendo was willing to make the deal, something had already changed. And I'll tell you right now, with the Switch, that it is changing in the opposite direction for what would have to change. They survived the Wii U. So something worse than the Wii U is what would have to happen. So I don't know what that is. I don't want to think about it, but I guess it would be a place where like we wouldn't care. Like it would be that level of fall off because, you know, they're already starting to put their IP in places where they can monetize in different ways. They're doing all these diversification stuff. All of that stuff makes it less likely they run into that scenario because, as John pointed out, Activision had done the opposite. They had consolidated. So they're more exposed to risk.
Mm-hmm. And there you go. I mean, you can see it right now. It's, you know, Call of Duty is, I think this year its sales are down 36% year on year. And that's a catastrophe.
Right.
Right. It's like next year they're talking about, oh, the next, supposedly the next entry in the series is going to, the phrase that I've seen is going to, you know, redeem the series or redeem the franchise. And it's like, and that's exactly what Activision backed themselves into, is the fact that they rely so much on these key franchises.
The tent poles.
Yeah, the tent poles, to the exclusion of everything else. Guitar Hero killed off, all of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, Tony Hawk was basically killed off until, like, they just had the remaster. They just killed off anything that wasn't a consistent, huge moneymaker, you know? They drove off, you know, Bungie because they drove them off. They didn't like working with Activision anymore, so they left. You know, even though they have a very successful game, but it just wasn't successful enough for Activision.
Right. It was meant to be the game that releases on the parallel part of the year from Call of Duty.
Yeah, they wanted it to be exactly. They wanted it to be another Call of Duty type franchise, and Bungie, that game is not like that. It's not that type of deal.
No. So I think it would be. There's a lot that would have to happen to get us to this point. There's a lot of things that would have to be solved to make it possible. Like the actual mechanics that would have to like the gears that would have to turn in order to make the sale even work. But I think there are a million things that would potentially hold it up, not least of which is I think regulators both on the Japanese side would be motivated by domestic political concerns and would not be willing to let it happen, as well as armed with laws that make it much more difficult. And on the US side, I think, and Europe would probably have to sign off on it too. I think the regulators would be significantly less inclined to let them acquire a console manufacturer. Just because it is an explicit, like Sony would definitely file a brief going like, no, don't let them do this.
Yeah.
Here's why.
Yep. Now I was thinking I could see Sony acquiring Capcom.
There's a couple Japanese companies that are in that space of like, okay, maybe it's time. So Japan console publishers had a consolidation phase about 15-ish years ago. You had Namco and Bandai merge. You had Tecmo and Koei merge. Shortly, you know, 7 or 8 years later, Atlus put themselves up for sale. Well, the company that owned Atlus put Atlus up for sale. They were owned by, I think it was an investment company. And they ended up in Sega's hands. There is probably grounds for consolidation in Japan right now. Level 5 consolidated with Concept a few years ago. Remember when Level 5 was everything? They had the most powerful franchise in Japan. Yeah, it didn't hold. Remember when Concept was run by a scam artist? Oh, that's today. I'm gonna get sued this year. I'm gonna do it. There's probably some space in there for consolidation. I could see Sony potentially doing it, but Sony's not really making much of a play in Japan right now.
Yeah.
So it's tough to tell.
Like, they really have shifted to focusing on the West.
I mean, they moved Sony Computer Entertainment to the United States. Mm-hmm. Like that was a Japanese company inside the conglomerate, and it is now based in what, Santa Monica?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So like that's all you need to know. That's where the priorities are.
It's where their bread is buttered, so to speak.
Yeah, it is. All right, we need to end this conversation. So emails, they go to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. That's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I didn't say it at the start of the show. I apologize. They go to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I am hearing that there are people who are having their emails bounced by Gmail, which runs the NWR email server, as spam. We are hearing about a lot of people experiencing this. I don't know why. We are looking into it. We have followed the instructions that are provided to us, to possible no effect, which is frustrating. But if you are experiencing this, first off, I apologize. We are working on it. Secondly, there's still a way to email us. In every article that goes with this episode, and I usually write an article between 1,300 words and 70. Somewhere in that range. There is a link that goes to a form that goes to our inbox. It is working. I have tested it. Multiple people have tested it. People who could not send us emails have confirmed it does work. If you need to go to that and you don't want to go to the article and read my fine writing, which you should because it's pretty fucking good. There's usually jokes about the episode in there. They're usually kind of funny. You can go to NintendoWorldReport.com/mail/RFN. That is, again, NintendoWorldReport.com/mail/RFN. And you will be able to email us through the form there. Again, if you are experiencing problems with email and you're being bounced and you go ahead and send us the form, please let us know in the email you send. Hey, also, I had problems with my email. It got bounced. We are working on it. Neil's been taking a look at it, which I greatly appreciate. We're going to figure it out. But for right now, bear with us while we try to solve it. I apologize for the inconvenience. But again, that is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, or to use the web form, nintendoworldreport.com/mail/RFN.
You know, James, I'm disappointed in you because you missed the opportunity to use the phrase, please understand.
Please understand. I encountered that phrase. So, all right, I'll tell this real quick. I do my Japanese lessons before the show. It's about an hour every day. So, like, I work out, I do Japanese, and then I have dinner. I encountered please understand as a phrase to learn last week.
It's too good.
That's it. Wakatte kudasai. And I'm like, fuck no. Like, it came up in Japanese. And it's like, okay, you can figure this out. We've taught you the root word here, and you know what the suffix is. What does it mean? I went, understand, please. Oh, God, it's please understand. No.
Yes.
And then I typed in please understand and hit enter, and it was correct. And I'm like, oh, hell. I've encountered the cursed phrase.
Mm-hmm.
So this was in the same lesson where they kept giving me variations on I was divorced X years ago. something's wrong with Duolingo.
Yeah.
So I remembered seeing some people saying that the form online to write us does not work from their phones.
Oh.
And you know what? I'm using Firefox on iOS. I'm using Safari. And there's flat out just no way to send a message.
Oh, no.
You can write stuff, test, but where is the button?
Oh, no. I don't know. I've never looked at it on a mobile device.
Yep.
Hey.
So make sure that you're writing to us from like your work desk, you know, during work hours.
Yeah.
Maybe your boss's work email account. Definitely.
From your we get a lot of those.
We get a lot of those hysterically so.
Including ones that say any emails from this are protected. And yeah. It's like, well, no they're not. I'm about to read them on a podcast. Yeah, you're right. The button's not. So this is we made a mobile version of this form. And didn't put a send button on it.
Wonderful.
That's genius.
At least
that's...
this seems more easily fixable than Google. You know, like
oh,
it's
agreed.
More in our power, I assume. Not
yeah,
in my power,
yeah,
but you know what I mean.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can send an email to our tech staff and go, could somebody put a send button on the form, please? John, didn't you run QA for this relaunch?
That was so long ago for this relaunch?
I don't know.
No, that was a long time ago.
That's fine. No, we'll get it. We'll get that fixed. We'll get that fixed. But yeah. If you put your phone in like request desktop page, you'll get one that has a button too. The form's not super useful, but hey, you could still enter it in. But yeah, to Em's point, just use a desktop to write your email. It's fine. But again, we're working to try to get regular email service resumed. So please understand. Wakatte kudasai. And on that, we're going to take a break. Stay tuned. We'll come back with some new business. Thank you. We are back with new business. You can send your new business to us because we're going to play it on this show. It's not an email segment. We already talked about the email segment. And I have decided that I would like Guillaume to start off new business this week.
Okay. Well, to finish up on last week, I started talking about the Grace Attorney, how I was at the end, or what I thought was the end. Thankfully, I was right. I was at the end, but there still were a few hours of exposition and explanations. And yeah, I got to say that this Shu Takumi might be pretty decent at telling a mystery and tying it up in a bow, you know, like just a very satisfying story where no I's are undotted, no T's are uncrossed. If a character just inexplicably disappeared for a moment, like he has to go and tell you, like, well, why weren't you there when this was happening? And like, there's an explanation. And sometimes, you know, like it's a pretty elaborate one and it makes sense that you had completely forgotten that that could have been a potential plot hole. But Shu Takumi did not forget. Shu Takumi never forgets. And so he's going to explain it to you. So
even if you don't care, especially if you don't care.
Especially if you don't care. So yeah, so ultimately I enjoyed the game. Like two of these games in a row in such a short time is a lot to ask from me. Like I can't, like these were like big, you know, each chapter, each quote unquote game in this two game collection was at least like 40 hours, I would say. And, yeah, so that's already a hefty Ace Attorney game, and there's two of them. And I needed to take a break. I didn't even take the break between the first and the second one, or maybe I did take a small break between them, but I took a months-long break to play Shin Megami Tensei, like in the middle of Chapter 3 of the second game. So I was completely lost when I got back to it, but I needed a break. Like I was like, this is too much. So again, I'm complaining about this, but it's just, it's too long. I wish that the game had been like, I wish that these games were a little bit more, swift, a little bit more, that someone went and edited them down to, just the good stuff, you know, because ultimately, like, I think what kills it for me, is, maybe like the 120th time that the prosecutor is like, what is this? You know, like, it's always the same kind of like the courtroom procedure, you know, is always the same. The kind of some of the exchanges, like there's only so much that they can do with them. And, I wish that at some point in making like 10 of these games, like they found a way to excise them from the dialogue, you know? Like I feel like corners could be cut somewhere and still retain all the good stuff. But I don't know. I've never tried to write anything, much less like a mystery or a video game where, you know, like this. So I don't know. But I feel like, bring an editor in, I say.
I think some of it is he likes to let the story slow down.
Mm.
Like to create, because mystery novels will do that. They'll kind of have that cadence of like speed up, slow down, wait for the next lead, pick up. But it's tough because what these games try to do is they have to tell four or five self-contained stories that are all, maybe not all of them, some are just literally filler, that add up to a larger story. And I gotta imagine that sucks to do. Cause I guess you lay out your main story first and then you start constructing sub stories around it, I guess.
I suppose so.
It feels really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard. Yeah. I guess, I wonder if Takumi's ever discussed this process, writing these. But yeah, no, that I guess that's the way you would have to do it because you can't just make it up as you go, you know, like you can't just be like, I think you have to have the main plot kind of, plotted out before you can actually, divide it into, little mysteries. But anyway, so I enjoyed it. It's good. He's a good writer. I would prefer shorter games. And speaking of that, I recently acquired a hand me down from my parents an old iPad that can only run like iOS 12 or 13, like a, you know, an old version. It's not a, I don't know what version of iPad. It's pretty old, but I'm pretty sure it can run Ghost Trick. And there so I tried to get Karen, I tried to force Karen to play Ghost Trick. Didn't work. She wasn't really enjoying the puzzles, and it's hard to play together on a DS screen, even a DSi, DXL screen. But on an iPad, I might be able to pull it off. So finally, I've got a way to force Karen to experience the genius of Ghost Trick. So I'm excited about that. The other thing that I've been playing is I've just started No More Heroes 3. And No More Heroes is one of those series where I played that, I feel like, a long time ago. You know, a decade feels like a pretty long time ago. I really enjoyed it. I was a fan of Suda51, his style, his writing. But it's not a series that I've ever been eager to go back to because, you know, it was on the Switch. Not on the Switch, sorry. It was on the Wii. And sometimes it can be rough to revisit games that were on the Wii. And they were not especially like the most technically scintillating games on the Wii. So, you know, and beyond that, I thought like, well, even the world of games and how we, I don't know, what people thought was cool back then and like things have changed a lot. And I wonder if I would have, like, I watch TV shows from 10 years ago and I'm like, wow, this does not hold up at all. And what was I even seeing in this show when I was watching it and loved it and thought like this, I'm going to love this forever, you know? So all this to say, like, I've not been eager to revisit the series, but got No More Heroes 3 from the library, and instantly I was like, yeah, I'm still into this bullshit. I'm still into Suda51's bullshit. I cannot... It's hard to describe because we've talked about this maybe a few years ago when I talked about Travis... what's it called? Travis Strikes Back? No More Heroes?
Travis Strikes Again.
Strikes Again. Yeah. The gameplay in that game was not great. I was not really enjoying playing it, but everything surrounding it, the presentation, the kind of grindhouse-y interstitials and cutscenes, lots of like FMV for no reason, or I don't know, like lots of adopting, like trying aping old like PC-88 graphics and stuff like that. Anyway, like, so all of that and writing ultimately what was a pretty good story with good characters and like humor that actually landed for me. I loved all of that. And so I started No More Heroes 3. Immediately, like, it hits you with cutscenes of Travis just getting into a mech and going into space and, you know, with a sword just, like, slicing all the bad guys all at once and just landing on this the giant, you know, alien evil lair while saying, like, fuckheads. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, this is amazing, and I love this, and I always love this. This is awesome. I'm into Suda51's bullshit. So if you've ever been into that type of stuff, I highly recommend checking it out. I am playing with the Joy-Con detached from the... So I'm playing on TV with the Joy-Con, with the motion controls, because I do enjoy the motion controls of that series. Basically, all it is that you press the Y and X buttons for light attacks and heavy attacks, and sometimes for a finisher, you're asked to just, you know, twist or jerk the motion controller in a direction to pull off a move. And I like that. Like it's kind of punctuates the violence in a neat way. It works really well. I don't really want to play it with, no motion controls, but that's kind of a problem because, I apparently live with someone who's not into Suda 51's bullshit. And, Karen is not enjoying watching me play this game at all. And in fact, and I can understand because there are No More Heroes, like, is a violent series. Yes. But on the Wii, it was very lo-fi and, you know, SD. And still, there was a lot of, how can I say this? Abstraction in the violence,
yeah.
You know, because in addition to streams of blood coming out of like a severed neck, fountains of blood. There was also like coins shooting out, and it was all, you know, again, like the lo-fi, you know, cha-ching sounds and stuff like that, that kind of made it seem less bad, maybe, you know, over the top, but not just purely violent and gross. The added resolution here, the added power, and the lack of any kind of coins shooting out of anything at all really makes it a bit more gruesome than in the previous games. And so when you see someone's arms ripped off and, split in two from the middle, it hits a little bit different. I'm fine with it, but yeah, Karen was just like, I don't want to be looking at this, so I'm just going to go do something else.
Suda's style would be described in one word as abrasive.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like he's got the same kind of love of, you know, grindhouse as, I guess, someone like Tarantino. I don't know. Why am I making this comparison? It's pointless. But, you know, like it kind of going like does the, like if we've seen, I think, in recent years, some developers add, like that VCR kind of, tracking yeah. effect, right? Some people really love it. And no one loves it more than Suda 51, I guess, is what I'm saying. But it works. He makes it work. Like, with Travis Strikes Again, like, there were whole articles from, like, a fake gaming magazine that were hyping up, you know, an old video, fictitious video game. And I was reading that and I was like, wow, so true. You know, really nailed the tone of these old magazines, really nailed the, and like made me, I don't know, like, ultimately, I guess what I'm saying is that, I love his bullshit, and he's a pretty good writer, and he's good at what he does, even if his stuff is very particular, you know. So if your tastes happen to line up with his, I suppose, yeah, give this a shot. I'll just say that I started playing the game on normal, and the enemies, the regular enemies, are just, fodder. Like, they're not a problem. But somehow, like, the first boss fight, which I thought would be the, you know, it's probably the easiest one. I've only done one so far. But I really, like, I died over and over again. Trying to beat him, and I'm not sure if it's because it's poorly balanced or if I was just a little bit too gung-ho trying to get as many hits as I could without really understanding how to dodge, how to defend, and stuff like that. But I really struggled, and that kind of made me wish that I played it on an easier difficulty. So you can't change once you've started. So I guess I'll warn people about that. Like, if you are there for the story, do dial down the difficulty. But other than that, I'm not too far into it, but it's purely, you know, it's the same stuff from the past games. And I've already collected trash in a swamp trying to avoid alligators. And I have unclogged a toilet in the overworld so that I could save and unlock new things in that area. So
again, this sure is a Suda game.
It sure is a Suda game. So yeah, I'm eager to play more.
Cool. Greg.
Sure, yeah. Well, it was just shortly before we started recording, we got the expansion pack release for this month, as it seems that is indeed the pace, because alongside that announcement, we had the fact that Majora's Mask will be next month's game, which will be pretty much even 7 years since its release on 3DS. So... I mean, I don't know whether I'd feel particularly the need to play that, because I still have access to it on 3DS, which is a very good version, and, you know, had some kind of valuable improvements in certain areas. And some people were not entirely thrilled with some of the changes made, like the Zora swimming apparently upset some people. I forget exactly how. But the Bomber's Notebook and you know, kind of some of the saving and the bosses being revamped and all that, you know, the 3D version, I would imagine, you know, having not played either version for some time, I would imagine that is, you know, the one to go with, rather than the N64 version, that will be here next month. But yeah, with Banjo-Kazooie, I just, yeah, toyed around with it a little bit. I've pretty much got all the jiggies in the first world, because that is really fast. And have not played this since, just toyed around with it a bit on Rare Replay 6.5 years ago or whatever that was when I got around to that. Too long after it came out, I don't think. So I can't give any kind of detailed breakdown of how it looks relative to the N64 original. But it's nothing obvious like with Ocarina of Time, of course, on the expansion pack service, which had all these anomalies, all these sort of inaccuracies with the fog effect and various other things. I mean, that's the thing with the other games, the one that I've not touched, Ocarina, because I guess if I wanted to replay that, I'd probably replay the 3DS one, which I own. You know, it's like Mario Tennis, I played a fair bit of. Paper Mario, I've talked about before, Banjo. Like, I haven't really noticed anything that glaring. Again, you know, when you haven't played these games for a long time, maybe, you know, it's, you wouldn't necessarily notice a number of things that might come up. But, yeah, the Ocarina thing, it couldn't really have been much worse, could it? This is the most beloved game that people know really well. So, you know, it's just like, even though to me there isn't a lot of utility in that being on the expansion pack service because I have other ways to play it, it was a bad signifier to everybody, wasn't it? Of just like, yep, this is, you know, this is the sort of accuracy that you'll find here. Even though, like I said, with the other games, it doesn't seem like there are so many problems, but that's just where we are. I don't think, you know, the emulation is sort of tuned to individual games the way that, you know, previous, you know, for the Virtual Console, for instance, I think they were. Just, you know, the emulator in each case was a sort of particular version to iron out any, you know, potential problems for that particular game, whereas I think the kind of emulation solution they're using in this case is more general, or at least it was. I don't know whether anything's changed in the interim, but still looking forward to F-Zero X. That's the one I really want. I mean, we need that soon, please. I'd probably spend a bit more time with Banjo. It's certainly the kind of game, I think, if you're going to revisit it, based on, you know, having done so with Mario 64 for the retroactive a while back, these sorts of games are portable, you know, is portability is good for these sorts of games. Save states, oh, yeah, are good for these sorts of games. It makes it more digestible. And also, the original Banjo was definitely, you know, before the bloat of DK and 64, and to some extent Banjo 2, he kind of set in.
Yeah, it's a much quicker game to get through.
No, I said this first world, just going off memory of and the fact that it's pretty bloody simple, have just cleaned up in a matter of minutes.
Yeah. You don't have, like, the evil jiggies, and you don't have, like, Humba's transformations you have to pick up, and you don't, like, there's just so much less. And it's more compact, too. I remember when I went back and played Banjo-Tooie, I was stunned by how wide some of the spaces were. Not to put things in them, just so they could.
No, I think it was very much just a case of, well, you know, we did the first game and it's, you know, it's going to be this many years later, you know, like 2.5, and which it was a significant, you know, span of time,
right,
in that the life of that system and in the industry back then. And it's kind of, we got to show, you know, that we've been able to kind of do things on a much grander scale than before, but, you know, which is, well, you know, it's certainly a bullet point when you're trying to sell the game, or, you know, for like reviewers to convey when they're playing the game. But, you know, in terms of like actually designing an enjoyable play experience that is divorced from the concerns of the time of, like, you know, how much are we pushing the medium forwards with, like, how bigger levels we can make or whatever. Yeah, those are two sort of separate concerns, and it didn't necessarily make it more enjoyable, especially, you know, in a revisit context.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else you want to talk about?
That'll do me.
All right. I will go next. I'm going to be very brief. I have a couple things I've started up as I've closed out on Long Racer 1, but the one that I'm going to talk about is I have been playing Scarlet Nexus because it showed up on Xbox Game Pass a little while ago, and people in the NWR Discord were like, you should play this. I became aware again that I should play this because somebody whose content I consume, who reviews various types of media, was like, wow. They were reviewing the anime that came out alongside this, and they were like, wow, this is unimaginable trash. This is some of the hottest trash in a while. This is great. Like, just garbage. And they're like, but the game is actually pretty good, and it looks nice. And, like, they showed some video of the game, and I was like, it really does look nice. And in fact, I had already downloaded it on my Xbox at some point, and I just said, well, and I had just redone my entire, so I redid my entire setup the other day. All new wiring. All the wiring is wrapped, so it's all clean, looked nice. And I was just testing out the various hardware. And so I wanted to test out both the network and the HDMI setup. So I fired up Scarlet Nexus because I knew it needed to download some stuff. It did. It was great. And then I played it for like 2 hours. I'm like, oh, this does look nice. And so I just kind of kept playing it for a while. I'm like 10-ish hours in over the course of like a week at this point. So I'm not playing it super hard. I don't have a lot to say about it. It looks nice. That's its biggest thing it's got going for it. It's kind of a open world action combat RPG, with some basic dodges and some air movement, and a bunch of powers that kind of give you extra movement and stuff. I don't think it feels super great. It's possible that if I got really good at it, it would feel decent. I don't think it's ever going to feel like a character action game. Although it definitely takes a little bit of hints from that stuff with things like perfect dodges and stuff. I don't think that's what it's going for. It doesn't have like a deep combo system to support that. It's got a relatively light one. And then it's got a story that's complete, absolute nonsense. None of this is ever explained. Why won't you explain things? Who are these people? Why do you keep talking about things? What's that proper noun you just mentioned? Please, God, will somebody explain to me what's happening? No? Okay. Well, here's more plot. There's so much plot. Why is there so much plot? Why is this plot completely unfollowable? It's fun. I love it. I love the fact that they just keep naming names, but don't tell me who these names are. It's a good time. I had to Google what Sauron is. I'm like, what is that? Why is everybody's five people said it in four sentences in the last conversation? What is it? It's just kind of this weird thing where, like, they've got all these proper nouns, and the game literally tells you, go watch the anime. I'm wondering if that was where I would have picked this up. But considering my intro to this was a review that said the anime is terrible, I don't think I'm going to do that. Especially because the anime it tells you to watch apparently spoils twists, like, in the second episode. So, you know, whatever. But can you spoil a twist for a story that can't be comprehended? I mean, I'm following the basic beats of it. It's just there's like weird, like I get the basic gist of it, but they'll like mention an organization. It's like, well, who the fuck's that? There are games with this kind of lore that have like a dictionary in the menus that are like, here's what all these things are, just so you know. This is not one of them. It does, however, have a lot of menus, so many menus, all of the menus. We have menus with submenus with submenus. It's a lot. They could have squeezed us in easily. They have a big dictionary for every enemy you can fight. And where they live and what their types are and all that stuff. But plot? Nah. Get that out of here. Don't need it. So yeah. I don't know. It looks nice. It plays okay. It's decent brain off content. for like, you know, half an hour or an hour or whatever. And yeah, on the 4K TV with the Xbox One, the world's most power, excuse me, the Xbox Series X, the world's most powerful video game console, TM, it looks really nice. So yeah, that's its biggest thing it has going for it. It doesn't animate any of the cutscenes though. It's static images with the camera panning and dialogue.
That's which pretty is crazy.
Very weird.
That is really weird.
Yeah, because it's all in model too. Like this is all being rendered in engine. It's just characters or they'll like render their face and their mouth are moving in just like a little box that has their face in it. But then it's the character models in a larger box just standing around sort of not even pantomiming. They're still. It's weird. Like, why not just animate the cutscenes? It's so goofy.
That is weird. So they're 3D cutscenes, but they're just static.
Yeah, it's in-game.
That's really
it's
weird.
It's in-game engine. That's really it's the weird. In-game models. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that feels like something that you would see from like the PS1 era or something.
Yeah. So like their faces are animated in the little box when they're talking, but I wonder if they tried to animate the cutscenes and it got too much work and they just said, all right, well, this game's got to get out. There's an
out
anime
it goes.
That needs to release.
Yep.
The anime is scheduled to launch in the spring season. We got to get this game out. I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird thing. But yeah, it was kind of a placeholder while I spun up some other games. So, you know, whatever. It's got two stories in it because from two different perspectives. I'll probably finish the one I'm on, and that's probably good enough for me. I could sort of infer from conversations with the other character what her story looks like. So, yeah, that's all I've got. John, take us home.
Yeah, so I've been picking up a few things that have been on sale here and there. I did. For the heck of it, I picked up Tekken 7. That fighting series is nonsense. It's just freaking nonsense, man.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, I haven't even been playing the fighting part of it. What I've been playing is the bowling game in it. There's a bowling game. Because they had the super deluxe version on sale that has like four season passes and like that includes the bowling game. But yeah, I mean, it's a bowling game with all the characters. And, yeah, so
is it better or worse than Tekken Ball, which was volleyball with all the characters?
I never played Tekken Ball. I never played that. But I'd actually kind of forgotten how completely silly this, like, you know. So I mean, yeah. So you know, you can bowl with the panda.
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's exactly. And you know, and
well, I mean,
and,
like, if you don't remember Tekken Tag Tournament 2, I believe on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. You could have these characters dressed up as like Toad and Mario and the princess.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the Mario mode where they had like the super mushroom.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
this
yeah.
It's a goofy ass game series.
It's a goofy ass game series. You know, I played through a little bit of the story. It's nonsense. I mean, it's
oh yeah.
They try to make it super serious and you know, like, whatever.
But they know. They dress it up like it's serious.
Yeah, that's why I kind of love it. Like, there's a lot of like just silly stuff in here.
People get dropped into volcanoes multiple times in this series.
Yeah, yeah, and the bowling is, you know, like each character has it has kind of like a, like they have like kind of a power rating and then a spin rating. So the power rating is just how fast you can throw the ball, and then the spin rating is what kind of control you have over the ball.
Love it.
And it's funny because like they have different animations that they do. If you know, if you get a spare, if you get a strike, if you screw up and zero out your meter, your character just flies all the way down holding the ball, and and they like basically they destroy, like they go through all of the all the pins and they just lay there.
Nice.
And yeah, so every character has unique animations, and there's like Noctis is in there from Final Fantasy 15. It's whatever. It's ridiculous, but yeah. So I'm having fun with that. I'm just very casually playing it. Also picked up NHL 22. Very casually playing that. That's pretty cool. Of course, they have the Ultimate Team thing, which you know, which is as deep down the rabbit hole as you want to go.
Games as a service.
Yeah. But what I do is I play it, you know, completely offline, because if I went online, I'm sure I would get absolutely destroyed. I find the controls were actually pretty easy to learn. I think they were, like, the last one I played in the series was NHL 20, and I just found the for some reason, the controls were pretty goofy to learn. I just never really got the hang of it. But this one is, I just find it, for some reason, I'm just getting the hang of the controls a little bit easier. But I think the reason why that is because the game modes that they have really good game modes if you just want to play like really, really quick games. So they have, in the Ultimate Team mode, you, of course, you're kind of collecting hockey cards, right? So, and, but they have like 3-on-3 rush mode where you're playing, you know, sped up 20-minute periods, but it's, I think it's two periods depending on kind of like where you are. There's like a kind of a, like there's a kind of a chapter system, unless I'm actually confusing that with the other mode, but basically like they have these shortened game modes. So you can go through games really, really quickly and they have challenges and stuff like that. So there's always kind of things to go through. The World of Chell mode is the one where you create your character and that has the chapter mode in it where you're going through, like there's 8 challenges you have to do. And so, you know, you might play it there and they're all very quick periods, like 2-minute periods or, you know, stuff like that, or like first team to 3 goals wins kind of thing. But what I really like is that they go completely overboard with all of the equipment that you can get. All kinds of different types of like parkas and toques and just all kinds of stuff that you can collect for your character. And, you know, as someone who grew up in a cold weather climate, I can really appreciate that. This taps deep into my, you know, Canadian roots. You know, when you have the announcer saying that, you know, one of the modes that has like this annoying NBA Jam style announcer and, who I kind of hate, but I also kind of love at the same time because he's just so ridiculous where he'll say stuff like, make sure you get your fries smothered in gravy. It's like, but he doesn't use the word poutine. God. So. Yeah, Guillaume would absolutely hate this guy. He would absolutely hate it, I can guarantee. But it's whatever. It is what it is. But yeah, so playing that really casually, and that's the kind of thing where, you know, you just log in every day, you get your free Ultimate Team pack, play a couple of games, and hop off, right? So, and then the last game I picked up was Red Dead Revolver, just for kicks, part of the backwards compatible sale for Xbox. But interesting game. Didn't know anything about it. This game's from 2004, developed by Rockstar San Diego, which used to be Angel Studios, which actually was part of the Dream Team for Nintendo 64, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. They, at the time, before, you know, they actually made any video games, because I don't think they'd really made any video games when they were touted as part of the Dream Team. Their claim to fame and the thing that Nintendo was getting us psyched for is the fact that they'd contributed to the CG work on the Lawnmower Man movie. There you go.
That movie really stands up.
And they ended up being involved with the conversion, the port of Resident Evil 2 to the N64, which was kind of miraculous, even though obviously, you know, probably
all the FMV,
not going to be, you know, the way that most people would, you know, associate playing that game with. And I'm sure, you know, it had concessions and things, you know, but, that definitely is one of the projects I can recall actually coming to fruition in the N64 era.
Yeah. Yeah. So Red Dead Revolver is, it's kind of a third person shooting game, but it's almost more of a shooting gallery game where, you know, the game starts off, and they kill your paw, right? So, but what you have to do is you're up against various enemies. So you'll come into a town and, you have some, you know, kind of mini, it was sort of like, lower level enemies that you have to shoot. There's a normal aiming mechanic, which, you know, you put the reticule over somebody's head and you shoot them. But then there's also kind of almost a bullet time mechanic where you hold the trigger and you basically point the reticule over the person's body like 6 times and then you shoot them kind of thing. And that's the standoff, the showdown kind of mode, I think it's called. And And so in each of these towns, you'll kill some of the lower level enemies, and then you'll kind of have a boss enemy that you have this showdown with, and then it moves on to the next part of the story. And there's, you know, there's kind of a hub town where you can go and talk to people and stuff like that. But really not what I expected, especially based on, you know, coming from the Red Dead Redemption games where they're open world. Very different. Just very interesting to see the beginning of this series and where it came from. So it's not bad. I'll probably play a little bit more, but I wouldn't recommend anybody necessarily pick it up. I just picked it up more out of sheer curiosity. And also, we talked about this a little bit earlier before the show, but Time Splitters 2 and Time Splitters 3 Future Perfect, I picked those up too. So I'll probably play those. That was pretty sweet. I was waiting for those to go on sale. But yeah, so I'm just playing a little bit of all kinds of different things here and there. So
a sampler, as it were.
Yes. Yes. The poo-poo platter, if you will.
I didn't want to go there, but okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Well, that actually does it for our new business this week and, in fact, the show. As I said in the last segment, we are having some issues with our email. We are aware, but you can try to send us an email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We are working on it. If you get the bounce back message, I apologize for the inconvenience. We're trying to fix it. You can use the web form. It's in the article for this very episode. You can go read the article. I bet you didn't read the article. I bet you just got the feed or do it. I read a really good article, and there's a link to it in the feed for the podcast. So you can go click it there. But it is nintendoworldreport.com/mail/RFN. But you don't have to type that because you can just go read the article and click it. I'm doing a plug, which is why I'm going to transition to Greg. How far did y'all get on the, review every game front?
Well, next week, you know, Thursday after this goes out, we'll be in the Switch era. It'll be 2017. You know, on the home stretch now, twitch.tv/SarenMcKen. Also, there are YouTube archives, I believe, on Saren's YouTube channel. If you miss it live, I mean, it's appointment consumption, isn't it? I mean, clearly, but if somehow you miss it live Thursdays at 7 PM Eastern, as we go through the dim and distant past of the Switch era, you're welcome to use the archives or of all the stuff that actually was in the dim and distant past. Also, if you missed those episodes.
Just a reminder, Greg, you're going to be reviewing Game & Watches again soon. It all comes full circle.
Yeah, it does. But we're through the worst of it. So DSiWare and all that good stuff, at least, just where it's just, there's just so much stuff. And just rated cultural touchstone Miitomo. So, you know, that puts it all in perspective, I think.
There we go. All right, well. Anybody else have any plugs?
Nope.
Just hair plugs, James.
Wow.
Do you?
No.
Okay.
So we're now. So congratulations on potentially upsetting Microsoft employee Leisure Suit Larry as the episode title. But on that, I guess we're going to conclude the show on a very odd note. Greg, what's our music to end this week?
Well, you know, I did this last year for Cleveland, so I have to do it now. It's only fair to do it for Cincinnati. Cincinnati Bengals in the NFL.
Yeah.
Just ended a 31-year playoff win drought. That's,
God.
You know,
wow, so the last time they made the playoffs was when Bobby Kotick took over at
Activision. Well, it's the playoff wins.
Yeah, they lost 7 consecutive playoff games across the decade. Yeah, there was a 15-year appearance drought from 1990 to 2005. And then they made it quite a few times and lost sometimes in just excruciating fashion. We're talking about Kimo von Olhoffen rolling up on Carson Palmer's leg, that bizarre game that AJ McCarron started with all the penalties. I mean, just real sickness for the ages. But it's over. It's over now. 31 years over. We've really, especially because the Browns went last year, the Bills went last year, of course. What we're left with is the Detroit one. That's the one we've got to get rid of.
They've got to make the playoffs first.
Yeah, well, to be fair, the playoff with Drake for Detroit should have ended a few years ago with Dallas. Like, they got robbed blind in that game with officiating incompetence. So that's what, again, they usually are when it goes this long. There's some sort of criminal, sickening defeat. But yeah, it's, with Detroit, it was a year after, in 1991 playoffs. I believe they beat Dallas and then fell to Washington in Washington's last Super Bowl campaign, who, of course, also beat the Bills in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, that was a long time ago. The Bengals, a year longer, but it's over now. And so what did I go with? Well, just a matter, because that was January of 91, which also, video game connection, basically Bo Jackson's last game in the NFL. Video game legend Bo Jackson.
Yes.
Probably was the first of the Bengals playoff losses, because they beat the Oilers. It was the last time they won in 99. The week after, they played the Raiders and Bo dislocated his hip and never played football again. So there's that. But the where I'm going with this is, in early 1991, we as a family were saving up to import a Super Famicom. And it wouldn't happen for a few more months, but just a matter of probably a week or two before that last Bengals playoff win, Gradius 3 came out for the Super Famicom in Japan, which will be one of the games we'd get when we imported it. And of course, it's kind of famous for just having like ridiculous slowdown. They really could not handle stuff like the splitting bubble stage and all that kind of stuff. But what you can't argue with is the soundtrack is stellar. Even, I think, nicer to my ears. I'm biased because there's so much affection for the Super Famicom sort of sound, you know, the way they did it with the samples and everything. But it's got a sort of softer, richer kind of quality to it rather than the more shrill FM synth of the arcade that I think really, like, you know, same songs, broadly same arrangements for the most part, but just makes them sound really great. So we're going to go with the mechanical bass stage, which is like the penultimate level in the game, but it has a weird triumphant quality because you've just gone through a boss rush of like five bosses, and I think it makes you want to feel good about that fact before it gets you know, pretty crazy again with loads of bits of the stage coming to get you and stuff. So yeah, a wonderful soundtrack and a nice little time capsule about just how long it's been, you know. It's the Icky Shuffle was happening in Batman.
Oh my god,
that's all I'm gonna say.
Icky Woods. There he is.
Jeez. All right, well, on that, it is time for us to go. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.